Howdy, it's Bootstrapped Web. What's up, Jordan? How you doing, man?
What's up, Brian? Good to be back.
Yeah, back in the States. How was your trip?
Trip was great. Europe was good. Get to see everybody. You know, that was the most important thing of the trip was just seeing everybody. Yeah. Getting all together.
So was it literally everybody on the team?
It was not everybody. The brand new hires that have only been with the company for about a month, I thought it was a little premature to kind of to do that, but I hope that gets done. I think the next one will actually be here in the States. So now that it didn't matter, you know, between there and here. And Ben is super nomadic, so he's easy to travel. So he's actually in Slovenia for the next 2 weeks. So he's there for a total of 3 weeks. So that means just me kind of eating it and flying from Portland out there, which is like 26 hours of travel, which hurts, especially when you're super old. So it was the four of us. It was myself and Ben, and then the two developers, Rock and Jan. It was cool, man. We had a great time, a lot of laughing, and you know, the personal side is actually the more important for that type of trip.
That's cool, man. I mean, I definitely miss that, having that like camaraderie and being able to hang out with coworkers. You know, I was just recording a video about this morning. I still strongly favor building a fully remote team, but it's just tough for us to do meetups, especially as the team has grown. We have like a pretty large headcount at this point. It's still a lot of like part-time people, but we just have a lot of people in all different corners of the world, and getting everybody together is not...
it's a big thing.
Yeah. I mean, the expense, the logistics, I've been able to meet up with certain people in certain places when I'm going through those parts, but yeah, it's our hangouts are mostly just Slack, basically.
Right. And I look forward to being able to just put everything on the company and just get everyone together and that sort of thing. But even now it's like, be careful with the budget. So we pay for airfare and where we stay, and like the Airbnb that we all stayed in Croatia, the company pays for. But then like the other stuff we still pay for personally, because it just doesn't make sense to just bomb out the company with this huge expense. Yeah, so it's a little tricky, but it was worth it for us. The truth is, we need to do it more often.
Yeah. So a little like rundown for today. I don't have a whole lot, but I'll probably talk a bit about some retargeting ads that I just fired up yesterday. I'm still working through hiring a project manager. I think I'm going to pull the trigger on that, send somebody the offer today. That's my goal before the weekend. I'll talk about how I hired the podcast editor for my other podcast, Productize Podcast. Gave him a process to get most of that work off of my plate. And I'm hiring a video editor, and I have a couple people doing a test project on that. I could talk a bit about what I'm doing with video and whatever else comes up in between. What do you got?
Cool. Sounds like a lot of hiring. I like this little thing that we're doing where we kind of just talk about what's going to be in the episode in general.
Yeah,
it's good because we have the list in front of us. Why not just talk about it?
Yeah, hopefully it keeps people tuned in till the end if they want to or not.
Hey, if people at this point are, you know, aren't into it, you know, what are you gonna do? Like, what am I gonna change? All right, so one of the best things about the trip in Slovenia was that we hit a big like revenue goal while we were all together, which was a lot of fun, and it helped in kind of bring a lot of positivity and pride. And, you know, we are very far from done, but it did give us a chance to reflect back and be proud of. You know, the last year was a crazy challenge with a lot of ups and downs, down for a long time, and now finally coming back up. So to hit that revenue goal while we were all in person was a great way to kind of celebrate and take a moment to pause and appreciate everything that's been going on, be proud of it. And along with that, the company is now experiencing just a new set of problems, you know, which we've talked about before. So with the influx of customers has exploded our productivity to bits. So our system just got overwhelmed. And so we're
like
looking
the support
for,
onboarding.
Yeah, onboarding, support, development, everything just got jammed up by new users and new issues and new problems and new bugs and new features. It's just like so new features ground to a halt. It just feels like we're kind of winging it all of a sudden, right when we shouldn't be winging it. It feels like now Systems are coming into focus. Ben's very system oriented and I'm not. And it's been a very straightforward, like, okay, Jordan, that's nice for the first part of the company. And now it's just, you know, we have to have systems. So that's the big stuff. So I'm going to talk about our project management issues. I'm going to talk about people issues. We just let someone go yesterday, which is a kind of difficult and emotional thing, especially when it's not like a clear cut, like, oh, you did something terrible, therefore you must get fired. It wasn't that at all. And I'm going to talk about my shame in not doing any marketing and how we're going to try to fix that by hiring. So it's changing needs of the company, project management stuff, and then people issues of firing and hiring and everything that's kind of gone on with that.
Very cool. Yeah. So, I mean, like, why don't I just start it off with like this quick thing about retargeting ads? It'll be maybe like one of the more tactical things we'll talk about today. Everything else will be the softer, more frustrating people stuff.
Yeah, but we can also talk about that softer stuff in the context of what we're trying to do tactically.
Yeah. So I've been talking about how I've been running some Facebook ads, and those are still running. I think they're going pretty well, although I'm still having a hard time tracking results, attributing clicks, attributing leads, attributing clients back to the Facebook ads. I think that's probably a problem that a lot of people have, but they're worth continuing. I know that. Even without having hard data that I could look at, I could clearly see there has been an uptick in client signups, like paying clients. There's been a definite uptick in leads.
So you think just the general awareness and seeing your brand?
Yeah. And I mean, there have been at least two or three now clients who like told me or they wrote into the form that it was a result of the Facebook ad. So, I mean, that's attribution right there. They just tell you.
straightforward.
I'm also really happy with the cost per click, which is something that I've always kind of struggled with, like running B2B ads on Facebook, seeing like fucking $10 clicks. And it's like, I can't do this, you know? But now I'm happy to see that our top of funnel cold ads are getting well under $1 a click. I just checked it today, and for the last 7 days, it's been at 60 cents or 65 cents per click. So, I mean, I'm pretty happy with that. And then, you know, I guess it's a few dollars per email sign up. So the ads that have been running consistently or continuing to run are just cold ads to free content, like articles. And I still have the one article that I did. I'm probably going to start doing another cold ad to maybe another article or two. But the new ads that I fired up yesterday are the next step after the cold ads. So it's the first is a retargeting ad pointing to our video workshop or like recorded webinar, if you will, called Sell to Strangers. And so basically, if you've visited the site in the last 14 days and you're not, and you've never seen that video before, show that ad to get you into the video.
Are you doing that in Facebook directly or with a tool like AdRoll or Perfect Audience?
Facebook directly.
Okay.
Yeah, I've used both of those before. I used to use Perfect mm-hmm. Audience a lot and I liked mm-hmm. their interface, but I don't know. I think now it just makes more sense to use Facebook. I think you have more control over the custom audiences and the little nuances in the ads and things. So, and for that one, I'm actually running two ads. One is a lead ad, a Facebook lead ad. So the content of the ad is the same, but the lead ad keeps them within Facebook and lets them enter their email address right there in Facebook. And then that's the opt-in for the video workshop. I integrated that with Drip. So as soon as they do that, they get access to the video workshop. The other version of that is instead of the lead ad, it actually, they click the link, they come to our landing page on our site and they opt in there. It's only been running for a day, so I don't know, but I did see an opt-in today, which came through the landing page, not the lead ad. Although in the past, in my tests, I think the lead ad has been working a little bit better. So I'm going to give that some time and see what happens. That's step two. First was the cold ad. Step two is retargeting to get them into the video course, our video workshop. Step three, I also fired up a retargeting ad. So if they have seen the video workshop, now they're going to see an ad to request a consultation.
Okay. So it's like an advertising funnel.
Yeah.
Right. It's from one step to the next.
Yeah.
With display ads.
Right. Because the video workshop teaches a bit, and then it clearly the call to action is, hey, now next step is to request your consultation. And if they don't do that right away, then they're going to start to see ads to say, hey, you can go request a consultation now.
It's such a valuable like piece of information to do ads that way. And it's actually still hard to do. There, I saw a Shopify app come out that does this, where you can say, show this ad between X date and Y date, show this one. And it allows you to build a funnel, but it's just for your Shopify store. Like there's still no service or course or blog post even to just show you how to do this. It's kind of frustrating.
You can, it's really complicated to set up in Facebook, but you can create like an evergreen campaign of ads.
That's how it should be. If someone hits your site, you should be in control of the different ads they see over, let's say, a 21-day period. You don't want to show them the same ad for 21 days.
Exactly.
First. Yeah.
Yeah. And we've seen results where they're much more responsive in the first week since visiting. And then after that, you want something else. So I'm actually starting to build that out a little bit. So far, I have visited the site in the first 14 days. And that might even be long. I might shorten that to like 7 days.
I think the thing is you don't know which offer is going to be right for them.
So yeah,
you should show.
But in my funnel right now, everything is. I'm trying to get everybody into that video workshop. Like, no matter how you come in, content upgrade, email newsletter, like free samples. Like, eventually, if you hadn't requested a consultation yet, then the next thing you're going to see is like, hey, check out this video workshop. We've got pop ups for it. That's where I'm funneling everything in. So first 2 weeks, you see the video ad, and then between 14 days and 21 days, we retarget for a pillar article of ours. And then I want to do like another one, like the following week for another article and just have this like evergreen campaign of ads. I got that up and running just yesterday. So I'm going to give that some more time to get some results. But I think overall right now, my focus is marketing. For audience ops. I mean, obviously it's always marketing for audience ops, but you know, and I'll talk about next, like getting project managers on board. I need to get myself fully out of working with the project management team. And we have the service all nailed down, like what we do for clients. It works well. I'm not messing around with that at all. My whole goal right now is to just drive more leads into audience ops. You know,
blast from a few years ago.
Exactly. and I'm like, I kind of want to just double the number of, client signups we get per month right now. I would like to do that within the next 6 months. And I think that'll mean doubling traffic and doubling, I don't know about doubling traffic, but at least doubling leads. Cause I think our lead to sale conversion is pretty good.
So more leads.
Just, we need more leads. So. Yeah, that's kind of my focus.
All right. So you're working on the right thing.
Yep.
Cool, man. All right, let's see. So I had this funny thought like a week ago, and I was like, what is this feeling that I'm walking around with? And the way I described it to myself, the way I like wrote it down to like, this is for the podcast. So the feeling I have is that I have an exam later in the day, but I haven't studied. So I wake up in the morning like, oh man, how is this going to work out? It's almost like, how am I going to be exposed for not being prepared? Right? Like, it's like this thing, it's on the way. I'm just dreading it. And it's a very strange kind of feeling. And I don't like it, obviously.
Well, what is the exam?
It's every day. It's every day. It's all this stuff that I haven't done that I feel like I should be doing or should have done. Or it's this weird feeling of being unprepared. It's a touch of the imposter syndrome thing. It's, you know, so one of the things I don't like about it is it's clouding my ability to just be kind of happy. Because if I had told myself that we would be where we are right now in terms of the revenue growth, if I said that 90 days ago, I probably wouldn't have believed myself, and then I would have projected and said, oh, if that actually happens, I'm going to be walking around like super happy. And the weird feeling of being unprepared and like it's clouding that. It's adding a negative touch to it. So one of the reasons I think is because of disorganization. So along with the influx of customers came a falling apart of our systems. And I think one of the key things we need to figure out is how we manage our projects. So let me know if you have the same type of experience. We have like these two worlds. We have like this tech world that the developers and Ben and the sprint and features and bugs and all that stuff lives. And then we have the marketing support and like non-tech. And we've been using Trello as like this unifying thing that both sides of the company can use. And Trello, I feel like, is amazing and it works if you have discipline. But this influx of customers has erased all semblance of discipline. Like if you have to proactively keep this conceptual framework in your mind of like, here are my cards, here's what I should be doing next, here's where I should look because it's Monday afternoon, so I need to be doing this type of a task. Like, there's so much thinking that I need to keep in my head. It's so abstract at all times where I feel like now that things are chaotic, I need like nothing abstract. I just need to sit down and be like, here, dummy, here are your tasks for the day.
Yeah, I definitely deal with that, but probably in a very different way because we're productized service and we have some software tools of our own and we certainly have bugs with those that need to be dealt with and the bugs arise from the service. But in your case, the whole business is the software. So I could see how it gets like in our case, I work directly with our developers on our software tools, but the rest of my service team doesn't really interact with the developers. The service team, if something doesn't work, if they're installing a plugin on a client's site and it's not working, they're going to escalate it to me. And I know that the client is waiting on this thing to get, or at least their onboarding process is now waiting for this thing to be resolved. So it's on me to either go in there and fix the setting, or it's on me to say, okay, that looks like a bug. I need to go talk to the developer about that. And I need to file a GitHub issue for the bug. But that's how we, in terms of development issues, like bugs and things, we use GitHub, and Every task that I need my developers to work on, I always give them a GitHub issue. I don't just ask them to like, hey, can you quickly do that thing? Like, you know, it's a very specific GitHub issue and I'll, you know, tag it with bug and
right. But your day to day, your work, it's funny to say, but you almost have this added benefit, at least in this specific way, of client expectations. Like, you can't not do this task.
Right. And that's what's been frustrating on my end is that like, I have other things. I'm working on Facebook ads and stuff. Like, I don't, these things just come out of nowhere and they hit me and I'm like, all right, well, it has to get resolved, you know?
So. Okay. So now we're getting somewhere. Okay. So my diagnosis of all this stuff is, what ends up happening is that the urgent just overwhelms the important. So even if we have everything planned out, we have a sprint and we have all this stuff and it's not organized, but even if it were organized, it still requires more work on our end to make sure that the urgent doesn't overwhelm the things that we set out strategically, that we say these are important. So the past few weeks that we have just kind of, it's been set on fire. And I think that's where that feeling of unpreparedness comes in, because I just wake up and I say, today I'm going to try to do one or two important things, and all the regular process of the day is that the urgent just comes in and just buries it. Just, and I look at it and I just say, there's just not a chance that I'm going to spend an hour and a half on this. And I know part of it is discipline and part of it is like, hey, you're the business owner, you need to kind of make the time for it. But yeah, it's easier said than done.
I mean, I think so there are two things, and look, I definitely struggle from the same exact thing. The urgent just knocking out whatever I wanted to do today, you know. One thing that I've noticed is that a lot of things can seem urgent and they're just not. And we think that they're urgent and they're not. Usually the urgent things are from new paying customers, right? Like, you want to make new paying customers happy. You want to get them through the onboarding process. Some things are deal breakers. They're showstoppers, you know? But there are a lot of things that customers are willing to live with because the tool still solves their problem. And you can just tell them like, yeah, you know, that's something that we're working on. It'll probably be a couple of weeks, but we'll get it fixed. in the meantime, here's a workaround, you know.
Right. You'll live.
Yeah.
And it usually does not result in a cancellation. And sometimes if it does result in a cancellation, you can't do anything about it.
Yeah. And also, like in your case, with a high volume, you know, high volume of customers, it's like, all right, well, how many customers does this thing actually impact? Like, if we lose one customer, not the end of the world. If we lose 20, then maybe it's something.
Right,
to,
that's a bigger deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've looked at it throughout the entire company, actually, and we're moving off of Intercom and going to Zendesk. Is that right? Yeah, Zendesk. For our support, because the volume of chat through Intercom has made us lose our minds. Because
well, I'm curious about that. Like, first of all, like I tried out Intercom for a few weeks about a month or two ago, and I frankly didn't like it. You know, I know like everybody uses it, but I don't like it. It depends. Yeah,
a whole bunch of different things.
I definitely don't like it as a support desk.
That's the thing. It falls apart as a support desk. As a chat function, it's outstanding.
It's good
on the marketing site.
Marketing site, homepage, live chat. Yeah.
And then triggered messages and being able to segment. I mean, I don't need any help, right? I can go in and say active users and trialers in the past X amount that have more than Y revenue, send them this notification, hit send, done. So that's amazing. Yeah.
So that's even more advanced than what I was using it for. But I was using it on the homepage of Ops Calendar. And then for a little while, I was using it on the homepage of Audience Ops, our service. And I only intended to use it for marketing, for like on the homepage, like just talking to new leads, try to get them to become leads. But I'd find customers come in and like send requests in there.
They want it.
You know, it's like it's there. Like somebody's there. Somebody's on the chat. Like, and I have a question.
Your problem to sort it out.
Yeah, you sort it out. You forward it wherever it needs to go. And like that was just really, you know, so I just turned it off. I stopped using it. And
okay.
And that's it. But
we want to turn it off, but we need, obviously people need a way to get in touch with issues and questions. So yeah, we've like that was one of our biggest issues in terms of urgent and important. It was just, it's just overwhelming. And because it's not even the user's fault, it's set up as a chat. So people are like, hey, are you there? Because they expect like an AOL instant messenger.
Yeah,
back.
It's totally.
Like,
and look, I visit tools that I pay for and stuff, and I use their live chat all the time.
Like, that's the problem. That's actually what you want.
I know. Like, and I know that like sometimes they might not be there and they're going to get it later, and I'll just shoot a bunch of questions in there, like just email them back to me, you know.
Right. And you're like a good and decent person, but other swaths of humanity look at that situation and say, so if I am the loudest and freak out the hardest,
yeah, I know,
they will actually respond to me.
I know.
And that's, it's so not cool.
I know. We fired
one customer. It was too hardcore.
Yeah. We used live chat consistently in Restaurant Engine, and it was a nightmare dealing with these like crazy restaurant owners. I'm interested to hear why Zendesk, because we use Help Scout for, you know, for all of the email, the shared inbox, and it's been great. And I've tested out a few different help desk tools. I haven't really used Zendesk except as a consumer, and I hated it.
In terms of that experience. When I first heard that, so our support guy Aaron, who's outstanding, is leading the effort on how to fix it, because he knows best on how to fix it. And when I heard the word Zendesk, I was like, really, man? I hear bad things. I hear it's old school and I hear it's annoying and all that. But it looks to me like they've done a pretty good job of updating it.
What I don't like about it, though, and like WP Engine uses Zendesk, or at least they did for a while.
Yep.
And they're my host for all my sites. And
so you interact with it.
Yeah, it's really annoying because it requires me to log in to my Zendesk account to track my tickets with you. Whereas
that is an option. It is not the only way to use it.
Okay.
It's a big piece of software you can do a bunch of stuff with. So,
because what I love about Help Scout is all my customers only need to remember our email address. They just shoot an email to them. It's just plain email. And to us, we've got tickets and organization and everything.
Yeah, HelpScout, made us lose our minds because the email functionality in it drove us out of our minds, and you would assign things. The logic in it was very, very strange to me. Like, when something comes to my inbox, I want to like assign it to someone. Just that process, and then it's not in their inbox; it's under their assigned tab. What we need the concept of a ticket. That's the real issue, because our support issues come in as a question that then gets turned into a ticket that a developer needs to look at and then respond to, and then that ticket needs to be closed. Like, there needs to be that concept. Otherwise, it's just a bunch of emails. And, you know, our totally norm is 50 to 100 intercom conversations. So we got that up to like 200 and had to work for like a week to get it back down to like 30. And it pops back up. You know, it's 50 or so new ones a day. And so there's like management that's required.
Yeah.
It's tricky.
Yeah. And the other thing I was going to say is like, you need somebody on the tier one just to sort it all out. Like, no matter, like, all these tools, they're all slick. They've all got the cool feature sets, but you still need a person to manually, at that volume, you definitely need a person to just, their only goal could just be assigning tickets to the right people. I mean, their only job, I mean, could just be that.
Right. And I want to give a shout out to my buddy Jared, who runs Appointlet here in Portland. We do like a monthly microconf, mastermind meetup sort of thing.
Cool. I use Appointlet.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, it's great. Great software. And he's a very thoughtful founder. He's a developer that just started hiring developers. So now he's like relooking at his system as opposed to like, oh, I just jump in and do whatever I want. I've been learning a lot from him on process and system.
I feel for them, anybody in that space, because at MicroConf, I met like five different direct competitors in the calendar booking space.
Yep. You know? It's a big market, so that's good.
Yeah. And I use Calendly. Everybody uses Calendly these days for like, and I use that for my personal, here's my calendar to book a time with me. But I do use Appointlet for the one specific feature that they have. And Appointment is embedded on my AudienceOps site so that when people book a sales consultation with me, they use that and not Calendly. The reason I use that is because that was the only one that I tested that enabled me to automatically redirect the person to my page of my choosing after they book an appointment. Calendly doesn't do it. A bunch of the others don't do it. And I can make it so that they book a consultation and then they go see my demo video right there.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. Yeah, I mean, they've been around a while. It's pretty established. And so the product's built out. And I just have shame around still using Calendly because I know Jeremy is here in Portland. So I'm going to make that switch over. Yeah, so we can keep going down that rabbit hole forever. But how about you? What's next on your...
All right, well, I guess... I don't know if this was, were you just, that was your project management thing?
Yeah, look, it's really how to deal with urgent versus important. And it flows from support into project management. It's like this whole thing.
So in your case there, it was mostly about tools and software and systems. In my case, I have a project management issue and that's just people. We need more of them. So project management at AudienceOps is kind of like an interesting role, and it's very different from what people typically think of what a project manager does. But I can't think of a better name for it than project management. So,
we're looking for a marketer, salesperson, support person, documentation person.
basically. The thing is, like, we have a very streamlined and standard system and process, and the way that we deliver work, and we only do a very simple plan for all of our clients. Whereas a typical agency would do 1,000 different projects, different sizes, different shapes, different clients. And a project manager's job there is to juggle all of those balls and take that mess and make it organized. In our case, the PM is really just to be the person like moving our process along, making sure there are no roadblocks, nothing's gumming up the works, and being the relay person between the client and our team, but everything kind of follows our standard schedule and templates and everything. So I try to aim to have our project managers each manage about 10 to 12 clients each. And now our two project managers are managing quite a bit more than that. and they're both going a little bit crazy.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's still not even like a full-time position, even when you're managing that many clients, because it doesn't take a whole lot of time. It's just a lot of little conversations to keep track of, and due dates, and different people, and you know, different tickets and Help Scout, like all, and different Trello cards. It's just, once you get well above the 10 to 12 mark, it just gets too chaotic. So I need to get a third person in. And I think this time around, I'm actually going to hire two people. And I've done this before. Like, what I found is hiring and training a project manager is harder than any other role on the team. And we've had probably two project managers who flamed out. It sounds more dramatic than it is. I mean, like they just didn't last as project managers more than 2 months, basically. And that's because as talented as they are, they just couldn't really fit with our system, and they caused more issues than they were able to put away. And you know, it's kind of like anything else. As great as somebody can seem on an interview, you never really know until they get in and start working the process and everything. So I think I'm just going to hire two, and we could probably use two more instead of just one. So I went through and I interviewed, I put up an ad like 2 weeks ago. I used WeWorkRemotely.com, which I use pretty frequently for hiring people. And then I interviewed about six people, and I'm narrowing it down. My goal is to send the offer out today. I think I have an idea of who the two people I'm going to hire are. But I've been going back and forth between like three different people. Like, do I need somebody who can also write, or do we need a project management person? And like this one person is in Canada, and we try to make everyone in the US for that role. And like, I think we're still going to bring the Canadian person on. Like, I don't know. It's, you know, because we've had two PMs in the past not work out. And so it's definitely making me hesitant, or taking more time than I should, to decide who to bring on. There's no real excuse for it other than that. So I just need to kind of pull the trigger and get this person started next week. Oh, and the other thing that I'm kind of happy about now is we have somebody on the team who's a team manager, internal team manager. And that's really like a tip for you, really, is to have somebody internally to kind of be the support person for the rest of your team, and not client facing, you know, just somebody to kind of organize things and take a lot of those escalated issues off of your plate. That's what this person does. And she's been on the team for a long time. And so she's going to be,
is that a full-time position?
Part-time.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, lately my mentality is that we need full-time people who are like obsessed with the company and the product.
You know, in my case, I'm just really careful about keeping expenses under control and people and headcount under control.
Yeah, I call it bullets. That's what we call it internally. We say we only have, you know, like right now we have five full-time people. But I say we have, you know, we only have a certain number of bullets to fire in terms of people we can have inside the company. And each bullet needs to have huge impact. So it's like I would love someone to take like certain things off my plate. Like the only part-time we're hiring right now is someone to write documentation, because that generally sounds like doesn't need to be full-time.
Yeah. And I mean, I definitely understand like having a full-time, totally dedicated owner of their role to that. Like, I totally get that. I would love to have that, but I did let expenses get a little bit out of control like 6 to 12 months ago, just hiring and giving a lot of people full-time positions and keeping them in those full-time positions probably longer than I should have, without inching them back. And that's when we got into some cash crunches and things got a little bit tight. Now we've kind of corrected all that. And I mean, we're starting to grow again in terms of clients and revenue. So with that, I do need to bring on more people like project managers. So, but I'm still trying to keep it lean as much as I can to not get back into the trap where I was 12 months ago. And so what I try to do now, this is like a productized service thing where I try to tie almost every team cost to specific revenue. Like, people deliver our service. We have people in place. I pay writers on a per article basis. Every article that we produce for a client, we're getting revenue for. So whatever.
Right, so you only want to incur expenses when you incur larger revenue.
Exactly. So we pay editors per article that they edit.
Right.
We pay.
So an example of someone not connected to revenue would be like a project manager.
Well, even project managers, I've adjusted in recent months
to like number of clients.
Exactly. They get paid on a tiered basis based on the number of clients that they're managing. So
All right.
But there are a few roles like the team manager. That one's one of those roles where it's like, that's like an extra expense, and that's not exactly tied to a revenue piece. But she's there to make kind of everybody's life easier and also just add quality. Like she supports the writers and she's kind of like a quality control person with the writing team and helps them make the content even better. And they have like writing sessions and critique sessions and stuff like that. So she's just there to like add quality and also be an ease on me and like shield me from a lot of issues.
The shield thing is very interesting. Like how are you viewing that? I have this very strange relationship with it where I'm like, I want to be doing more stuff and I think I should be doing more stuff. And the other side of me is like, I should be doing nothing. I should be doing only the stuff that only I can do. And that is the weird relationship stuff and strategy stuff.
And that's what I'm trying to do right now for myself is like, I need, my job has to be just drive leads and sales and get people into the service because I have everything else managed. Like that's in my mind, that's what I want to be doing that. But at the same time, project management issues come up. They don't know how to handle a client's question or there's a technical something that's not working and I have to deal with that or I'm like hiring too slowly and the PMs are getting too overwhelmed and I need to get somebody on board yesterday. And it's like that stuff slows me down, but I'm trying to get to a point where if I can double the number of new clients that we're getting every month within the next 6 months, our revenue and our profit is going to really get to a more than comfortable point. And at that point I can truly invest in like a full-time like general manager or really, really invest into better software faster and like all that stuff. But I'm like really close to that. I'm like really close to that hump. Like right now it's profitable enough. It supports me and everything, but I don't have that total freedom to just put people in charge of everything,
Yeah. All right. All right. Well, it's good to identify.
Yeah. So tell me about your team issue.
It's been a big shift the past few months. You hear about it where you're like, as the CEO, like your job is really hiring and making sure your team's happy, that sort of thing. And it really kind of started coming true recently where I look at the development team and I just think to myself, how do I make sure they don't get exhausted and frustrated and how do I make sure that they're happy? Because, that's like our most like talented or skill heavy work.
Right.
So a lot of that has come down to,
and it's like, okay, it's the, what they say, like the core competency of the business. It's like you need software,
right? It's the thing. Yeah. Like I might think of myself as invaluable, not really, not quite as valuable as the guys who build the thing we sell. Like the most value I added was knowing what to build. But now that trajectory is set, it's them. They are the thing. It's Ben and the tech team are the actual, that's where all the value is now. So what that has led into is when we started growing and there was more chaos in the company, my attention very quickly came to look at them and say, this isn't going to last. Nobody can do what they're doing now, trying to juggle all the support stuff and all these features. Nobody can do that forever. You can do it for a few months and things are exciting and all that, but everyone, you're going to get tired. You have to come back to a normal life where you have your weekends and you hang out with your girlfriend and you go hang out with your friends and you need a normal looking life. So it has become clear that this stage is now people. It is staffing. So here's what happened. Okay. First we hired a third developer. They lasted about 2 months and the fit was wrong. It was the cultural fit was wrong. So perfectly competent person, didn't gel with the team, And so we let them go. Okay. We survived that just fine. And after that, we said, okay, now we need more help on the marketing side of the company. I just call it tech and marketing. Basically, marketing means everything that's not tech. I don't know how else to say it.
Right.
The practical side, the non-tech side.
Yep.
So we hired two people on the advice of one of our investors here in Portland, Adam, who was very helpful. He said, I was going to hire one. He said, no, hire two, which was a very, very good decision.
Yeah, it's kind of what I'm doing right now with the project.
Yeah, that's why I heard you say it. I said, yeah, that sounds right to me.
Yeah.
So we hired one customer success person, one customer support person. My thinking was, we need someone in customer support to just handle the influx of just questions and issues and bugs and issue, you know, just that influx of people. And then we needed someone on customer success whose focus was getting people from trial to paid. Because getting new trials was not an issue. Now it's starting to become like, okay, now how do we increase it? But the biggest issue in the company was trial to paid. And so I wanted someone focused on that. It turns out now 2 months later that I thought a person saying, hey, you are the out of this cohort of 100 people, you're the 10 most important. I'm going to personally reach out to you and interact with you as a person to increase the odds of you staying as a paying customer. It turns out that assumption was wrong. And really the success part of getting someone from trial to paid, the customers don't really want to talk to anyone. They just want the product to work the way they expect. They want the integrations that they want. So it's much more tech heavy and support heavy at playing the role of success.
I could totally see that. Because I don't talk to customer success people when I buy stuff.
Right.
Like, you know, and like, yeah, I do feel like that term, that job title, customer success, it's like, I don't know, it's getting a little out of control, I feel like. It's not...
It is. It's a legitimate role that needs to exist, or at least a process or a discipline. It is.
I don't know. I don't know that I totally buy that. I don't know. I mean, I think
if you're selling $100,000 annual contracts for a piece of software that your accounting team of 25 people needs to implement, I think you do need someone that is focused on making sure that the project is actually successful.
But that's, you know, and traditionally that's called the salesperson or the account manager, you know?
I think if you ask the salesperson to follow through all the way to make sure they're successful, you're going to hurt the sales efforts. So,
right.
I do think it just depends on the situation. I thought because our price point was creeping up a little higher, whatever it was, I was wrong.
But I think you're right now about, and I think this is probably the case for most SaaS, maybe when they're still at this stage where not huge yet, but they're not small. Like customer success is support and tech.
And responding to issues and fixing bugs.
That's the thing. It's like, how seamless is their experience during their free trial?
How closely do you fulfill the promise that your marketing made?
Yeah. And it's not, and people don't sign up for a SaaS to have like a handholding, nice, comfortable experience. They sign up to solve a specific problem. They're trying to do something in their business. This tool is supposed to do it. And they just want to get on with their day. And like SaaS is supposed to be efficient, you know, otherwise companies would just build their own SaaS to solve their own problem.
Right. But if you recall, we did that whole demo phase for so long that we were building up these relationships, and I brought that mentality into this phase. And now we're like, do not request the demo.
Yeah.
I'll do anything to avoid doing a demo. I recorded like a 25-minute demo. Anyone who requests a demo, I say, watch this first and let me know if you have any questions. So now we're getting away from it.
But is it the kind of thing now like where, okay, so if you, so got rid of the customer success person, sticking with the customer support, double down on customer support and put your best customer support person on the onboarding support and then they have like backup.
Right. So now, right. So that's what happened over the past week. I just kind of came to the realization like that, unfortunately, we don't have the bullets to spare. So while this person was awesome and super cool, smart, creative here in Portland with me, I enjoyed hanging out with them. Like all that stuff just made it super hard to come to the conclusion that like, damn, right. Man, we need a different skill set.
One thing I noticed from hearing you describe it here, like this probably goes to that, you know, working remotely far away versus working in person together.
Yeah.
You hired a developer and he didn't work out after 2 months, gone. No problem. You had a customer success, didn't work out after 2 months, and it's like a huge pain, like, you know.
Well, it was actually, if we dig into that for a second, we had this mirror of an experience, because the guys in Slovenia who worked with the guy, he's a 21-year-old, like, you know, kid basically, but experienced. They had a much harder time coming to the conclusion because they're in person with them and they like the person. If like you're incompetent or you're like doing the wrong thing or you're screwing off or you're doing something on the side, that's easy.
Was your team pretty solid in surfacing to you, hey, this guy's not working out? Like how did that go down? Because I deal with that a bit in my team.
I got hints from it and I hope I got better at paying attention and reading between the lines, because people aren't going to say, hey, I don't like what's happening, or I don't think, I don't want this person fired. No one says, I don't think this person should be with the company.
People are so hesitant to throw somebody else under the bus.
Yes, it's not wrong.
Yeah. And you know, I'm sure you don't encourage that sort of thing, you know, but I do try to have some system where people can like, look, if somebody's not delivering, if they're consistently late, I got to know about that, you know?
Yeah. So it was tricky. So they had the experience in Slovenia of having a hard time coming to the conclusion because they were with them in person. And it was easier for me because I was emotionally detached. And now here in Portland, I was completely emotionally invested and they weren't. And so it was easier for them to come to that conclusion. It was much harder for me to actually pull the trigger. But I've read this great book while in Slovenia called The War of Art. Stephen Pressfield writes, it's all about resistance. And it was a very interesting experience to read that and then come across this experience of my gut says we need someone different with a different skill set, and then dealing with all this resistance, all these things that you come up with and create internally and emotionally and logically. You just create all this web of cloudiness. And I just looked at that and was like, I'm going to go right through you. But it took me a few days.
Yeah, it's story of my life. I think it's natural for
Natural. So now what we're doing is we are actually hiring 2 junior developers, and that is our support issue, because what's happening is our hardest to come by skill sets, the guys who build features, and Ben who does the planning, they're spending 50% of their time on support. And that I just looked at that while I was in Slovenia and I was like, this is a disaster. All my smartest guys are talking about is support. And I'm like, this is not right. So we're basically going to hire 2 junior developers that the customer support person can work with to hammer out the issues, to protect the time of the other developers. And then what I need to do is I need to hire a marketer on my side.
Yeah.
Yep.
Very cool. I think that sounds right. The junior developers just hunker down on the customer support issues and keep your main guys focused on building features.
I think it has to happen.
More hiring stuff. I'll just wrap it up real quickly here. I did hire the podcast editor for my Productized podcast. He started last week, and that was a really easy one because he kind of reached out to me. And just with the perfect timing and perfect pitch and everything. So he's down in Brazil and he's working on, and I've been recording, I think I have like now like 10 episodes in the can that are just waiting. He's working on those. I'm hoping to get that podcast like kind of relaunched June 14th. And then from that, and I'll have like 3 new episodes that day. And then from then on out, I'll have a new episode every week going forward for probably a long time, because I've got that pretty nailed down. Pretty good system in place where I'm just drop similar to what we do here, but it's a little bit more structured, where I drop the recording into Dropbox. He takes all the notes. He does the editing, puts the music in, uploads it, creates social media, puts that out, creates an email for the episode, schedules that out. So got that all hammered out. And then the other thing that I'm doing are some YouTube videos, and I've been trying to record 2 of those a week, and I've got, I don't know, maybe 8 or 9 of those recorded now. There are about 10 to 15 minute videos where I'm just kind of answering a specific question that I heard from a reader or someone or somebody on Twitter. And so I'm hiring a video editor for that, for same deal. I just dropped the iPhone recordings in Dropbox and then they take it from there. And I've been looking at a few different people's like YouTube channels and how they do editing and how they put like titles and music and make it cool and entertaining and mm-hmm. you know,
And this is all in effort to drive more leads.
This is not for audience apps. This is more for
my, okay, the other side.
Yeah. My personal blog and productize and that kind of stuff. So
which ends up leading into audience ops leads.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I'm talking about entrepreneurship and
right, different thing.
Yeah, hiring people, pricing, starting a business, that kind of stuff. So hiring a video editor is kind of new to me and I don't really know what to expect. So I just hired 4 different people to do it. All 4 of them are going to edit the same first episode of this YouTube series. I gave them the same video footage and everything. And I,
where'd you find them?
All on Upwork. And so one person is in the Philippines, one person is in Serbia, one person is in Uruguay, and one person is in Canada.
Love the internet,
you know. So and those are like 4 different pretty different rates and you know they I liked all of their samples and so I'm getting them back. I got the first one back today and it's pretty good, so I'm waiting on the other 3 to see how that goes. I gave them kind of guidelines and I gave them some links to some other YouTube channels that I've been checking out for kind of I guess inspiration or like something along these lines, give them an idea of what I'm going for.
Yeah. Can I hire whoever you hire?
Yeah.
you just do all the vetting and the best person, you just let me know who they are.
Yeah. They're really good. Like the thing with video editors though, is like there's so many different types, right? Like there's a lot of guys who have like film, like cinematic experience.
Right.
It's not quite. And then there are a lot of people who do like explainer videos with animations, but I'm not doing.
I need some of that too.
Yeah. But that's also a different thing, you know? So I'm looking for people who have experience with like person talking into a camera and especially people with experience, like making YouTube informational videos, you know, like vlog. I hate that word, but like vlog style, you know.
All right, so my Brian hack isn't going to work. That's not what I need. Fine.
but yeah, so that's kind of, you know, I'm still getting used to like being on camera and using a selfie stick and like driving while talking on camera and that kind of stuff.
Yes. But
yeah, this morning I did a video out of my backyard and did one in my office walking around.
It's good for you. Have you come across Russell Brunson's new book?
I heard about it. I heard it's pretty good.
Yeah, it is pretty good. It talks a lot about that that side of things of showing yourself and showing how you normally live your life and just kind of being prolific. He did a ton of it when ClickFunnels was getting started, and you could see a lot of people doing the same type of thing. And you know, you read and sometimes you hesitate, but you kind of know my business would be a lot stronger if I did it a lot more of it. I know that for sure.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, you know, I wasn't going to talk about this, but I was listening yesterday to Seeking Wisdom, the podcast Seeking Wisdom with David Cancel from Drift.
Oh yeah, okay.
I love that podcast. Just always like,
yeah, it's good.
Short but smart conversations, really, really good stuff. So they were talking about this idea now, like we're now in this third phase of SaaS, and I think this applies to a lot of different online businesses.
Ooh, but, okay, well, where's this going?
The first phase was like invention. Like, so think back like 10, 15 years ago, let's take what was offline and let's invent the first tools to do this online. And so that's what marketed those tools was like, hey, this is like, now you can buy books online and through this site. Like, so that's what sold the thing was because it invented a new thing that didn't exist before. The second phase was, and he had different names for it, but like, I think it was like efficiency. So there are more players, but the ones who make it more efficient, like you could have created a blog earlier, but then WordPress came around and that just made it more efficient, and that efficiency made it more widespread, and that's what sold more people on using it. But now we're in this third phase where it's so hyper competitive, and there are so many, every space, there are so many players, even if it's like a relatively low competition space, there's so many other options people can use to do the same thing.
Yeah, the ecosystems are and booming.
So it's almost like yeah, we can all work on like marketing funnels and we'll do that. But at the end of the day, it's brand. And I think that's the point that he was making is like, look, today it's all about just doubling and tripling down on brand and trust. And I know that's like a wishy-washy thing, but look, like we buy based on brand because you know you follow the founder or that brand is just known for building great things, you know, like there's plenty of cell phone. He made the example in the episode, like there's plenty of cell phone manufacturers that make perfectly awesome smartphones, but many of us buy Apple iPhones because Apple is the brand, you know? I just bring that up because like for me, like doubling down now into doing videos and doing more podcasts and writing more, sending more to my list, I'm starting to finally, I backed off this for a while, but now I'm getting back into it because I'm realizing, look, this is what sells my products and services is putting myself out there. The more I do that, the more things sell. Like it's as simple as that, you know? And I know that I'm not trying to necessarily make it reliant on me, but that's what throws so much energy into everything, you know?
Right. Yeah. Can I ask you your opinion on something that's very related to that? So if you look at that and you say, okay, I believe that that's true. I believe more content, being more prolific is better. I look at that and if I'm being honest with myself, I don't know if I can turn myself into that. You know, I might have a high opinion of myself and all that, but I don't know if I ever end up being prolific enough in creating content.
Yeah, and like I don't know that it necessarily has to be the founder putting their face out there.
That's my question. Can I hire someone to be the face of my company? That sounds so dangerous.
You know, I think a lot of like some people do it in different ways. Like if you look at what they're doing at Drift, David Cantle is the founder and he's on the podcast, but he's on it with his like marketing director, another David something. Sorry, I forgot his name. But so the two of them are hosting it, and actually the marketing guy is organizing it and planning all the episodes, and then David just hops in and talks for 20 minutes. And so like that guy runs their content. They're hosting a conference pretty soon. Like they're doing all these things around like, you know, like brand. Like you look at what Nathan Barry is doing with ConvertKit. Like he's putting on a conference. They do really strong content on the ConvertKit blog. And like, yeah, he kind of puts his face on a lot of stuff, but a lot of us in our circles know Nathan, but mm-hmm. I have a feeling that like ConvertKit has grown to a point where a lot of their customers don't necessarily follow Nathan Barry, you know?
Right.
And so especially in the early startup years, I think it just only helps to put yourself out there, invest in content, but just invest in more interaction and more of your personal story. Like we work with some clients who, and I'm not trying to make this a pitch for like do content marketing with audience ops or anything, but we work with a bunch of clients who do some podcasts of like they get the founder on a podcast and then they send us the podcast episodes and we turn it into additional article content, you know?
Yeah, it's like the only way I could see it happening is just super efficient.
Yeah.
Right. Like my marketing manager sets the whole thing up and I just basically come in as like the designated hitter. I'm like, well, let's do this episode together and then walk away. Like, yeah. That's the only
or way. You look at like what Lead Pages did. I mean, in the early days it was Clay Collins, right? And now they're so huge. They've got
Tim does the webinars.
Yeah, Tim does the webinars. Tim did the podcast for a long time, you know.
That's right. So, I guess that's a good analogy right there. Like Clay didn't worry that all of a sudden the company was going to be associated with Tim just because he does the podcast and does other stuff and does the webinars. Yeah. And Tim did a great job of like being understated in that way and not trying to take over and be like, I'm the main man and this is my product. He was almost like, So almost like an audience member showing you like this, check out what this product can do for you.
Yeah. And look, like you look at ClickFunnels or you look at lead pages. Those are two of what, hundreds of other solutions to create landing pages, you know, but why do people connect with them? Because Russell Brunson did webinars and Russell Brunson sells books, and Clay Collins and his team have put webinars and content out and they're guests on other people's podcasts and, you know, they get out there, you know?
Yep. All right. Yep. All right, man. I think we took people for a good ride for like an hour.
Yeah, that was fun. All right, dude. So
it was a good mix.
Yeah, we'll
good
get back catching to it. Up. Have a good weekend.
It's June. Hopefully, you get some nice weather over there in Connecticut. I'm coming out your way in 2 weeks, baby. I'll be in New York.
Are you? Cool, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll be around.
All right, cool, man. All right. Thanks, everybody.
Late.